If Timothy McVeigh was in fact in Junction City, Kansas, running a truck at a certain time in the afternoon of April 17th, how is he going to be seen at an establishment in Oklahoma City? So nothing that I'm going to tell you right here, and that's in my book, conflicts in any way with the cases that were presented in the federal court record in the trials in Denver for Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. What I found is 22 witnesses, 80 pages of detailed sworn testimony in which they positively identify 8 specific Middle Eastern men, this is very important, the majority of whom are former Iraqi soldiers, aiding and abetting Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols during various stages of the bombing plot. The most incriminating testimony centers around one man who not only matched the physical description of the composite sketch of John Doe 2, but he also matches the profile view, a dead ringer. When you overlay his face, and this is a exhibit that is on your website that people can collect.
It is uncanny.
It's pretty incredible. In fact, I had law enforcement sources look at it, and they said, Jana, it looks like they traced his face. From the hairline to the jawline to the nose to the tip of the ear, the measurements are exactly the same shape. Now, witnesses identified this Iraqi soldier not only in the company of Tim McVeigh drinking beer at an Oklahoma City tavern. This is not a fleeting encounter. This is 3 hours of exposure to this man. Two witnesses, two independent photo lineups that pick out the same Iraqi soldier with McVeigh, the evening of April 15th, 1995. This man is identified filling a large Ryder truck with $100 worth of diesel fuel at an Oklahoma City service station the evening before the bombing. He is identified timing his run from the Murrah Building one block east shortly before daybreak on the morning of April 19th. Out of breath, turns around to repeat his trek. 3 people see him. They pass within 3 feet of him. He's breathless, and he's looking at his stopwatch. How fast can he run on foot from that doomed Murrah Building all the way out of the blast range? He was practicing his getaway on foot.
He sure was.
Then you have another witness. Identifies him climbing into the cab of the Ryder truck that reeked of diesel fuel at a local motel an hour before the explosion on the morning of April 19th. Several witnesses positively identified Timothy McVeigh slipping behind the wheel of that Ryder truck before it pulls off its lot, headed toward downtown, toward 5th and Harvey, where the Murrah Building once stood. You have another witness who positively identifies this specific Iraqi soldier sitting in the passenger seat of the bomb truck next to McVeigh a few blocks north of the Murrah Building around 8:30 a.m. You have another witness standing at ground zero inside the Social Security office. She watches as John Doe 2 slips out of the passenger side of the Ryder truck, moves to the back of the truck, looks around nervously. He has very skittish behavior that draws her attention. She watched him get back on the sidewalk. He travels toward the northeast side of the building, right past her view. She gets a very good look at him. She's 12 feet away. She identifies this Iraqi soldier in a photo lineup. He is identified in the driver's seat of a brown Chevrolet pickup, racing out of downtown 60 seconds after the blast by a woman standing at a median on Main and Robinson a few blocks south of the building. She's stepping off. Nobody in traffic is moving. The bomb has just gone off. There's smoke, pandemonium, fire. The earth has rocked in Oklahoma City. Traffic comes to a standstill. One vehicle is moving. It's a brown Chevrolet pickup. This woman steps into the path. She looks right at the driver. Don't hit me. She jumps back. She identifies this Iraqi soldier. More importantly, this Iraqi soldier, you're not talking about just fleeting encounters downtown the morning of the bombing. You were talking about a man who had repeated exposure to 5 witnesses at a local motel in Oklahoma City in the months, weeks, days, and final hours leading up to that fatal moment of 9:02 a.m. on April 19th.
He was all over this story.
Well, and you have several of his Iraqi associates at that same motel with a Ryder truck, with Tim McVeigh, with the vehicles that were used, such as the Mercury Marquis and other suspicious vehicles. Let me give you an example of what happened around 7:40 a.m. on April 19th at this motel. The motel owner pulls onto his property. He normally drives around and surveils the property before going to the lobby of the motel office. He smells this overwhelming stench of diesel fuel. He stops his car. He rolls down the window. A maintenance worker walks over, and he goes, where is that coming from?
Thinking something's going on here. There's a problem, a leak.
And the maintenance worker goes right over there, and he points to it. Get this, large Ryder truck. And he says, look, I circled it. I looked for a diesel fuel. I got looked under the truck everywhere. There's no leak. He says, but the gas cap says unleaded fuel only. So what are we looking at here? Now, more importantly, all the police officers that are listening to me right now, that are working the graveyard shift, this is what they need to ask. Does this man have an alibi? Well, I can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, a reasonable doubt in a court of law, that this Iraqi soldier who was identified by multiple eyewitnesses as the third terrorist has no provable alibi for the critical hours of April 19, 1995. And do you know why I can prove that in a court of law? Because I've already gone to court with this man.
Yes, you have. He sued you, and you know what?
He sued me.
He didn't win, did he?
Well, he did me a favor. How many reporters have access to an investigative tool known as discovery? Oh, boy, I looked at this lawsuit and said, it's time to turn the tables.
Mm-hmm.
It's an offensive weapon, and I told my lawyers, start issuing subpoenas. And what I got was incredible. This man was forced to come to the table and sit across the table from me for 8 days.
Did you look? You looked him in the eyes.
Oh, I absolutely did. Absolutely did. And you want to hear something very strange? He didn't despise me. He respected me. It was the most bizarre experience of a lifetime. Here we are, intensely grilling this man for 8 solid days, and he turns around, and the only bit of information he ever volunteered without having been asked was incriminating details that only the man who was seen drinking beer with Timothy McVeigh on April 15th of 1995 in that nightclub and the female bartender that served him beer would have known.
Did he speak English at all?
Perfectly.
Perfect.
He feigned as though he couldn't. He had a translator. Okay, the first day, he's relying on the translator. Second day, relying on the translator. Third day, he's answering our questions, George, without ever looking at the translator.
He learns quickly, Jim.
That's right. And he blew his alibi. He blew it from here to next Tuesday. And I will tell you, I dedicate 2 chapters of my book dissecting every bit of information of where that man could have been when that building was blowing up downtown, and he knows he can't prove it. Let me tell you what happened with the lawsuit. Well, the district court in the Western District of Oklahoma, the federal court, threw it out. All 50 statements of fact and opinion that implicated this soldier as John Doe 2 were upheld as undisputed.